the nation's capital. This is D.C. Public Safety. I'm your host, Leonard Sipes. Ladies and gentlemen, the Community Corrections Collaborative Network, they're back at our microphones to talk about all the issues that we can do, should do, if all the organizations that are involved in the correctional system come together and agree to debate and agree to disagree on certain issues. The Community Correction Collaborative Network's mission is to serve as a forum to develop and work with the emerging issues, activities, and goals in the community corrections field. Back at our microphones is Greg Crawford. Greg is a correctional program specialist on the Community Services Division at the National Institute of Corrections. His experience in the criminal justice and mental health field includes over 14 years working in a misdemeanor probation department and at a community-based mental health center. Also by our microphone is Phil Nunes. Did I get that correctly?
Nunes.
Phil Nunes. Phil brings extensive experience totaling 25 years in management and nonprofit operations. Phil joined Avis House in July of 2014 as the Chief Programs Officer. And we have Spurgeon Kennedy, our Spurgeon Kennedy, a pretrial here in the District of Columbia. He's Director of Strategic Development for the Pretrial Services Agency for the District of Columbia and Vice President of the National Association of Pretrial Services. And to Phil and Spurgeon and Greg, welcome to D.C. Public Safety.
Thanks, Lynn.
How are you?
You know, this is an interesting concept. We talked about it last time, and I think it really is an extraordinarily interesting concept, because what we're talking about doing is bringing a wide variety of organizations together at the same table to debate and agree and disagree on the topics that are so important to us. I'm going to read a couple of the organizations involved: American Probation and Parole Association, Association of Paroling Authorities International, Federal Probation and Pretrial Officers Association, International Community Corrections Association, National Association of Pretrial Services Agencies, National Association of Probation Executives. And Greg, you're going to tell me that we have a new one?
We do, Len.
And what is that new one?
It's the National Association of Drug Court Professionals.
And that is extraordinarily important. Greg, what is new in terms of the Community Corrections Collaborative Network?
Well, we're actually in town. We meet twice a year. We're in town tomorrow and Thursday. We have all of our associations coming to Washington, D.C. We have a robust agenda, and we're looking forward to continuing the discussion about the emerging issues of the field.
Now, the emerging issues of the field are what? I mean, the public is constantly being inundated in terms of correctional news. I mean, it's very hard to read the newspaper or watch evening television without corrections being part of the news, either from a good point of view or a bad point of view. But we have the Affordable Care Act in terms of what's going to happen, how that's going to impact community corrections populations. We have the Second Chance Act. We have justice reinvestment. There's a lot of different things that are happening throughout the country that these organizations find to be very important. So let's start off with the Affordable Care Act.
Well, let me just, if I could, just back up for half a second. I think it's important that we just sort of lay out the state of the criminal justice system.
Yeah, please.
If you look at our local jails, we average about 11.7 million people cycling through our local jails each year. Since the early 80s, we've had approximately a 375% increase in the U.S. prison population, mm-hmm. and we have nearly 5 million people on probation or parole. So the system really is sort of bursting at the seams. And so now that with the introduction of health care reform and reauthorization of the Second Chance Act and justice reinvestment initiatives, to me, this is a real opportunity to make an impact and reduce recidivism and help these people that are in the system address these underlying issues of substance abuse and mental health issues. And the discussion I hope we get into today is about building capacity in the community and meeting the needs of these new opportunities for these folks in the system.
And having the major community corrections organizations in the country all come together and all agreeing in terms of a platform would be a huge plus if we're all marching in lockstep together. But these are organizations that are ordinarily overwhelmed by the amount of people coming into them. There are 7 million people under correctional supervision. 1.5 million are in prisons and federal prison system. Another, 500,000, 600,000 are in jails. Then we have another 5 million people under some sort of community correction setting. I mean, that's 7 million human beings on any given day. That's an enormous amount of people. Do we have the capacity to individually look at these people, provide treatment services, provide remediation so they do better upon release. 95% of them are going to come out. They're going to be released. Do we have the capacity to actually deal with these numbers? Phil, do you want to go with that?
Sure. I think, first of all, community corrections is an extremely important I always use the analogy that it's the penicillin pill for the corrections department.
Mm-hmm.
Without community corrections, prisons over the last two decades would have just continued to grow and spiral out of control. Community corrections has always served as an outlet and a relief valve for people coming home. But in years past, science is catching up. And back in the 1940s and the 1950s, there was actually a research article that says nothing works. Well, today, fast forward to 2014, we know what works. Mm-hmm. We know that risk-based approaches, tailoring individual and addressing needs of those in the criminal justice system based upon their risk,
mm-hmm.
and their needs, has great impact on reducing recidivism. So community corrections is a very big and very vital, important part to the correctional world. But that world is about to change, and it's changing in many states in the country because we are hitting way over capacity on funding issues. But it's also changing because we just cannot lock everybody up and throw away the key. Community corrections really serves as, and the seven of us organizations.
Keep it in the microphone, please.
The seven of us organizations coming together and really speaking with one voice, it is rather historic, actually.
I do want to get back to the Affordable Care Act that Greg brought up because it's of extraordinary importance to those of us in community corrections. But Spurgeon, did you want to opine about where we are in terms of resources?
I think Phil makes an excellent point. In years past, the community corrections field was almost a stopgap. If your jail or prison got too crowded, you use probation resources, you use parole, you use pretrial resources. That's not happening anymore. Right now, community corrections isn't a stopgap. We're the first option. And for most defendants and offenders, we're the best option in the criminal justice system. We are the thing that makes the most sense if reducing recidivism is the thing that you're trying to accomplish. Because of that, we're going to be used a lot more. Jurisdictions across the country are beginning to buy into the idea of evidence-based practices. They're beginning to buy into the idea that community supervision is the best way to address recidivism. And with that new way of thinking does have to come new strategies and new ways of getting resources to what's going to become a fast-growing population of defendants and offenders.
Throughout the program, I do want to remind listeners that we are talking about a collaboration that's headed up by the National Institute of Corrections that deals with marches in lockstep, hopefully, or in agreement, certainly, with most of the major community corrections organizations in the country. So it's something exciting, not just having the National Institute of Corrections come along and suggest something, but to have all the national associations that support community corrections also agree to it. But getting back to the substance of the field, lots of people have been before these microphones claiming that we're dumping literally hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of people into the community correction system who have mental health problems. People who would have been served under, 20, 30 years ago by facilities at the state level to deal with mental health, we suddenly become the repository for people who have mental health problems. So first of all, is that correct? And secondly, what is the state of the art from the National Institute of Corrections point of view and from the community the collaborative's point of view?
Well, I would say that up until health care reform, the jails and prisons had become the de facto mental health institutions in this country. And now with health care reform, individuals have an opportunity to receive health care to treat these underlying issues that help lead them into the system of substance abuse and mental health issues.
And do we have the capacity to deal with it? If we're the de facto repository for people with mental health problems, do we have that capacity? And it leads us back, hopefully, to a discussion about the Affordable Care Act.
Well, I think resources are definitely going to be an issue. There's going to be a period of time where we're going to have to figure out ways to build capacity in the community in order to really take advantage and leverage the opportunities of healthcare reform. Phil?
I would just add, I think that the Affordable Care Act is a terrific starting point, but it's healthcare is a really big ship that is taking a long time to turn as well. Mm-hmm. So I think we're just now on the eve of rewriting rules and regs, and I think states and the federal government actually are now starting to see exactly how do they get through some of the red tape that used to exist, but also how do you leverage those resources and get the provider, because it is a potential issue that the infrastructure does not exist to support this new wave of new services that overnight people became eligible for.
But, I mean, people are describing this as describing it optimistically in a way that I haven't heard in the last 4 or 5 years. The Affordable Care Act, with all its difficulties and infrastructure issues, does provide us somewhere down the road with the best chance of providing individuals caught up in the criminal justice system with the medical and mental health and possibly substance abuse issues that they so desperately need. Spurgeon, am I right or wrong?
This is potentially one of the biggest game changers that we've had in criminal justice in a very long time. It is also, and again, Phil makes an excellent point, if we don't use it well and if we don't know the population to apply it to the best, it could be a waste as well.
Okay.
We need to be able to know that these are the defendants and offenders who are in the most need of mental health services and substance abuse services. We have to get better at assessing. We have to get better at identifying. And we have to get better at matching the need to the resources. Again,
right.
This is a great and wonderful thing. We have to get better at knowing how to use it and use it well.
Okay, but are the different organizations, Greg, how many are we talking about now, national organizations?
Well, seven.
Seven. Okay. Do those seven organizations plus your individual organizations, do you all agree that this has huge potential, but at the same time has huge pitfalls? Are all of you marching in lockstep in terms of what we can get out of this, what we should be getting out of affordable health care?
Well, I think, as Kenny said, this is the potential to be a huge game changer for the criminal justice system and for the folks in the system. I mean, really, this is the first time that a lot of these folks have had the opportunity to receive health care and be covered to receive the treatment for these issues. And so let's take a look at this. If you look at in Cook County, in Chicago, Illinois, prior to the health care reform, 1 out of 10 individuals who came into the courtroom had health care coverage.
Right.
Since the implementation of the Affordable Care Act, they now have 9 out of 10. So that's a big difference. If you look at local and state jurisdictions across the country, they have to be proactive in this thing. They can't just sit there and let it unfold and expect miracles to happen. They have to be proactive and helping build that capacity in the community in order to meet these needs.
Len, I would just add one other thing. And for years I've been hearing this as a practitioner in the community for community corrections, is that sometimes you have to commit a crime to even be eligible to get in and get
right.
drug treatment, rehab. This is, to me, that's the game changer part. And I think the system's just going through some growth right now. But when it does catch up, these folks actually hopefully can be caught early on to get to the point where we prevent them from committing crimes and they get their drug treatment or their mental health issues back in check so that they're not going to the criminal justice system.
Does the Affordable Care Act focus on drug treatment?
Yes.
Substance abuse treatment, mental health services, also physical issues as well.
Okay, so
these are all risk factors when you're looking at recidivism reduction.
Because is it agreed between the four of us in this room that resources certainly haven't been there? We've all wondered why resources haven't been there when the great bulk of the people caught up in the criminal justice system belong to us in community corrections. I mean, is that a true statement?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. And we're wondering why the resources haven't been there, and now there's the possibility, if everything works well, that 4 or 5 years down the road, we could have an infrastructure that actually provides treatment services to people on community supervision.
And if I could add, too, I think there's an important caveat that we need to make sure we outline, too, because this is going to work in states that actually took the Affordable Care Act and raised the poverty level to the 133% level, mm-hmm. because that's the game changer. I think it's 25 out of the 50 states.
27, actually, now.
27 states have adopted that. Those states who adopted that overnight, people who, single men, for example, who are making certain level, like single men in general, but, of course, even women with children who mm-hmm. were making a different amount of money overnight became eligible for medical services, mm-hmm. which, again, includes mental health and substance abuse.
Okay. The radio program today, ladies and gentlemen, is on the Community Corrections Collaborative Network produced by the National Institute of Corrections. We really do appreciate the work of the National Institute of Corrections in terms of setting up this program. Greg Crawford is by our microphones once again. Phil
Nunes
is also by our microphones for the first time. He is, I want to mention him because he hasn't been here before. He's joined Ava's House as Chief Programs Officer in July of 2014. Spurgeon Kennedy is back at our microphones as the Strategic Director of Development Services for Pretrial and is also the Vice President of the National Association of Pretrial Services. I do want to refer everybody to the website for the National Institute of Corrections, www.nicic.gov, www.nicic.gov. There's a report that deals with the collaborative network, Safe and Smart Ways to Solve America's Correctional Challenges. Greg, we're going to go back to you. Correctional challenges. Again, you know, when I read something in the newspaper, when I hear something on the radio, watch something on television about corrections, it's uniformly negative. I don't think the average person out there, and I've seen surveys that backs this up, sees us in the same light as our law enforcement partners. They see us not in the best of all possible light. So is that part of the reason as to why corrections, especially community corrections, has been so resource poor over time? Do people have confidence in us? And is that one of the goals of the collaborative network?
Well, yeah, I think so. I think, you know, as we've kind of shifted away from this heavy incarceration push and folks are starting to realize the effectiveness of community corrections. I mean, I think, you know, oftentimes the only thing that people see is the negative stuff in the media. But the reality is that there's probation officers largely do a great job at, you know, addressing these issues, holding people accountable. But the reality is there's been some frustrations on both the part of the folks in the system and the probation officers with these resources. I want to get back to that for a second. A lot of these folks have not had the funding or they don't have jobs with the economy crashing in 08 and so forth. And now with health care reform, they have an opportunity to get coverage. They have an opportunity to engage in treatment and deal with the underlying issues. And that was a lot of the frustrations and the cause of these technical violations that these probation officers have had to deal with was the fact that these folks couldn't afford treatment, and now that has been removed. But what's really important is that these criminal justice agencies across the country look at setting up enrollment systems and determining eligibility for these folks and assisting these folks in getting the health care coverage. And probation, parole, and pretrial officers can play a major role in this and educating folks what's available to them. If you look at the decision points within the criminal justice system between law enforcement, court, jails, prisons, and community corrections, there's no wrong door for enrollment and determining eligibility.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, to me, people need to be aware that they can all play a critical role as a criminal justice professional in assisting these folks access health coverage and deal with the underlying issues that helped lead them into the system in the first place.
There's optimism because we do have the Second Chance Act, which we do want to talk about a little bit. We do have something known as justice reinvestment. To those of us in the criminal justice system, we understand that. Maybe the average person listening to this program does not. We do have a research base that is being more and more positive about what it is that we can do to help individuals not recidivate, and that lowers crime, it lowers the burden on the taxpayer. We do have all points of the political spectrum now suddenly agreeing within the last 5 years as to this is the way to go. We do have organizations such as Pew, Urban, again, National Institute of Corrections, who are basically saying there's a better way, a smarter way, a more productive way of managing the correctional system. So the stars are starting to align for us in community corrections. Am I right or wrong?
Absolutely, Len. I would say, first of all, the Second Chance Act, when we talked about resources a minute ago, provides those resources. I mean, one thing about we can do all the great evidence-based research in the world, but if we don't get to the point of funding those best practices, all that research is for naught. Mm-hmm. I think the Second Chance Act really provides a pool of funding, you know, and I give a shout out to my Senator Portman from Ohio, mm-hmm. Who is a big sponsor of this, to give programs and services and start to fund these programs using those evidence issues. So, I mean, the problems we have in this field right now is you have caseloads for probation officers are way unyielding. Research shows that higher risk, and not meaning dangerous risk, but those with higher needs or moderate needs need more dosage treatment hours of services, mm-hmm. if it's going to go to reduce the likelihood of them recidivating and coming back in the system. Mm-hmm. The Second Chance Act actually at least provides a venue or a stream of funding potential for programs to continue to move forward with those best practices.
But the point that I'm trying to make is that we're talking about funding, and here we have the President and Congress supporting the Second Chance Act, which is putting more money into research programs, putting more money into programs in the community and researching them to see if they're effective. So we do have funding from a variety of sources, and that's why Spurgeon, I'm beginning to believe, I'm beginning to be a bit more optimistic about our place in the sun, our place in terms of how people perceive us as having the potential for improving dramatically because we're getting more money from a variety of sources.
True.
Support.
I think all the groups that you mentioned are now on the same page, and that is the goal of any good criminal justice system is to protect the public, to reduce recidivism, right. is to look for ways of keeping people who are in the system out of the system in mm-hmm. the future. They're on the same page with that. We are on the same page with the things that are most effective, those evidence-based practices that make the most sense and that yield us the best successes. The real issue now, and this is where having partners such as Pew and others in the discussion, is how best to do those things.
And this is why the Community Corrections Collaborative Network now comes together at a very opportune time,
right.
because now there is money, now there is agreement, sure. now there is consensus.
You have 90,000 people who every single day do the job. They manage defendants and offenders. They work with those evidence-based practices. They have to live with those shortages of resources. What they've lacked over the years, and hopefully what the collaborative gives them, is a voice mm-hmm. To the people making those decisions about this is what we believe works best.
But national organizations are coming together and they're saying, hey, this, we believe, is the path. Very powerful national organizations,
yes.
the President, Congress. It's now politically popular regardless of what side of the political spectrum you're on. We now have, again, this is a collaborative network of national organizations coming together, yet I'm still wondering if we're convincing the average person sitting out there about our worthiness if all they're hearing is principally negative news coming out of the newspapers, television stations, and radio stations. Are we doing enough to sell this new collaboration, not just in terms of your network, but everything that I've just mentioned, all these new funding sources? Are we doing enough talking to the American people to convince them that we're players and we know what we're doing and we know which way to go?
Yeah. I think the group that we have convinced the most are those who make the decisions about where resources are going to go. If you're looking at local lawmakers, local decision makers, even as you said before, those at the national level, even with the dearth of public opinion, whether you're liberal, whether you're conservative, you now know what the issues are regarding crime and justice.
Governors are certainly on board.
True. I think we have the people on board who will listen and who can make the decisions about resources and about best practices that need to be made for us to move forward.
The question I have for everybody is that if we really put all these things in place, if we had the drug treatment, if we had the mental health treatment, if we had the vocational treatment, if we had reasonable caseloads for people who are doing community corrections where they could actually implement best practices, where they had a shot at implementing best practices, what would change for the average American? What would change in terms of their taxpayer contribution, Greg?
Well, I think, first of all, we're going to get safer communities. And I think one thing that...
Marginally safer communities, much safer communities.
Much safer communities. And here's the thing. If we, as our country incarcerates more people than any country in the world.
Mm-hmm.
One out of every three Americans has some sort of criminal record or charge or has been arrested.
Mm-hmm.
And so we need to go about things a little differently. And I think what folks are going to see, you know, with the implementation of the Affordable Care Act, with the Second Chance Act, with justice reinvestment, with people paying attention to the fact that we've gone about things a little differently, there's tremendous collateral consequences from having an arrest or a criminal conviction. You know, people, if you look at what happens, a collateral consequence of incarceration, harder to get a job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we renting an apartment or getting a loan or getting a school loan, these are all negative things that occur. And I think people are recognizing that if we want to stop this cycle, you know, we need to really take a look at changing that trend by, you know, promoting what's working. And community corrections, to me, instead of long-term incarceration, diversion-type programs where, you know, if you comply with a court-ordered treatment program, the charge drops off your record. We need to take a look at shifting to those types of things if we really want to make a difference in terms of, you know, keeping people connected to the community rather than, as Kenny mentioned on the last broadcast, shifting people off to prison for long stretches.
We're getting into the final minutes of the program, so I'm going to ask for your interest to be fairly short, Phil. Again, if we really did have all of these resources together, Greg said there would be a significant contribution to public safety. We would definitely lower the burden on taxpayers. We would throw fewer dollars into the criminal justice system. If this is such a win-win situation, why is it taking so long to come to this point of a national consensus in terms of what to do?
Len, I think you can't get past the 1 in 31 number of the Pew Research in 2007. 1 in 31 adult men and women were under some kind of correctional supervision. I think that that's what's waking up, awoke our country to think about this issue.
Mm-hmm.
I think that has opened the door to have now realistic conversations around issues and impacting. But we have to even go further than what we're looking at and talking about today. We have to look at the 1.5 million kids of incarcerated parents, and that 600,000 are destined to come in our systems. Our system is somewhat broken, and now is the time for us, I think, to come together. And that's what our collaborative's about. We're about coming together to talk about what are the most appropriate. And, of course, we haven't got much into it in this show, maybe for a future show, but the justice reinvestment movement that's going on nationwide, you're going to have to get to that point. But any time you can keep someone a taxpayer and not a tax taker, it's a win-win for, I think, all of us.
Spurgeon, you've got the final point. How do you summarize all of this to the governor's aide who's sitting there listening to this program, wanting to do something better in community corrections? What's our message to that individual?
The use of community corrections not only is the smarter way of doing business now, but also the cheaper. And as a taxpayer, as taxpayers, I think we all appreciate that. I will give you our example in D.C., where we try to implement evidence-based practices, both pretrial and also probation and community service.
About another 10 seconds.
Our jail is 51% capacity, and crime has gone down in our city. Most people are supervised in the community. They're supervised well, and we're safe.
Phil and Spurgeon and to Greg, I do want to express my appreciation for doing the show today, talking about an extraordinarily important topic. Do want to remind everybody that there is a document called Safe and Smart Ways to Solve America's Correctional Challenges. It's at the website of the National Institute of Corrections, www.nicic.gov, www.nicic.gov. Ladies and gentlemen, this is D.C. Public Safety. We really do appreciate your comments, and we even appreciate your criticisms, and we want everybody to have yourselves a very, very pleasant day.